Hello and welcome to the latest edition of the Better Places podcast from Consilio. I'm Sam Griffiths from Consilio, your host today. Today we are going to be discussing the upcoming local elections in London, which are scheduled for Thursday the 7th of May next year, and how the possible results could impact planning and development in the capital. At Consilio, we are now launching our monthly election reports, which will give you all the latest news and polling analysis each month, all the way up to May. Make sure you sign up to receive our first report by going to our website or clicking the link in the description. My guest today is Professor Tony Travers from the London School of Economics. Tony is the leading academic expert on London and its governance, and he has written numerous books on the city, including his superb history, which he edited, of the first 20 years of London's mayor, which I highly recommend. So thank you for joining us, Tony.
Too kind, thank you.
So I wanted to start with a little bit of history, really. Looking back, it was less than 20 years ago to the 2006 local elections. The Conservatives won the popular vote and actually controlled twice as many councils as Labour. And now fast forward to 2022, and Labour won the Tory strongholds of Westminster and Wandsworth, and at that point looked pretty dominant in the capital. So what do you think explains this shift that's taken place in the last 20 years in broad terms, and the decline of the Conservatives and the dominance of Labour?
I mean, it's a really interesting question, because up till almost the end of the 1990s, over the full cycle at the national level, because, you know, we know that when there are parties in power for a particular length of a long time, their party tends to do less well in local elections. But up to the end of the 1990s, the Conservatives and Labour did really equally well over time. And in fact, their vote share in London over the long term was very close to the Great Britain average. So London, despite being strange in other ways, was very like Great Britain when it came to voting, so the average for Britain. And what happened after the end of the 1990s is that Labour, other things being equal, pulled ahead and the Conservatives fell behind. This is partly, I suspect, for demographic reasons. The population of London changed radically. It became even younger than it had been, more immigration, sort of a change to the demography of London. So it doesn't mean the Conservatives couldn't win in some places, but they fell behind in others. So, you know, as we know, Wandsworth and Westminster are still marginals between those two parties, almost as if it was the 1950s, whereas elsewhere, in, say, Lambeth, next door to Wandsworth, and Camden, next door to Westminster, in those boroughs, which used to be competitive between Labour and the Conservatives have effectively almost died out. So it's a mixture of demography, varies from place to place, and I think where the Conservatives have held on, they're still competitive, but overall, they're not as competitive as they once were.
Thank you. Yeah, that's really interesting. And then we're going to try and focus on some of those boroughs a bit later on. But I guess just looking at the elections we had last year in London, both the mayoral elections and then the general election, obviously Sadiq Khan secured a pretty successful re-election, third term as mayor, and Labour won an enormous majority in the general election. But what explains the sort of rapid decline in support Labour have seen there, not just the national issues that we all know about, but local issues? And do you think that those results in 2024 were sort of the first warning sign for Labour that cracks in their London dominance was really starting to show?
Yes, I mean, actually in the general election, London was very good for Labour. They won more seats, although it's true there were a number of constituencies last year in the general election where they did far less well, and that was a longer leading indicator of what's likely to happen in the borough elections. And they did badly in places where there was an insurgent vote to their left. So we're talking here about a mixture of Greens, well, they didn't exist at the time, the new Jeremy Corbyn party, yep, they're new, but also the pro-Palestine independents. And that sort of group to the left, or collection of politicians to the left of Labour, has proved capable of winning substantial number of votes, even in the Prime Minister's constituency, in Holborn and St Pancras last year, but also in a number of East London boroughs, and actually outside London in places like Birmingham. So you've got here a fragmenting of politics, which is a national phenomenon, but which has a, will have a particular, is already having, will soon have a particular London manifestation. It'll vary from borough to borough, but over the city as a whole, there's going to be a fragmentation of what used to be a fairly block Conservative plus Labour vote.
Okay, so in terms of the splits on the left, one of the Green Party's making a lot of headlines recently with their energetic new leader, Zach Polanski. So what do you think, what boroughs do you think the Greens should be focusing on looking at the elections next year? And where do you think they have a real chance of actually winning seats and perhaps taking control of a borough of Labour?
Well, I mean, the Greens, but I think the Greens will have to think long and hard about how they work with the Corbyn, your party, it hasn't got a name yet, but when it gets a name,
yep,
and other independents, because otherwise they'll just fight each other and minimise their capacity to unseat Labour. But to answer your question directly, they clearly, the Greens definitely think they've got a really good chance in Hackney. So that's one place. I think Islington, which after all is Jeremy Corbyn's own borough, where he won as an independent in the general election last year. So possibly in Camden and Lambeth and Southwark in some parts of the borough. And then for other parts of this sort of left of Labour coalition, you'd expect them to win seats in boroughs like Newham. Not sure about Tower Hamlets. Tower Hamlets is a different thing altogether, but possibly in Newham, possibly in Redbridge. So they won't win everywhere, so they're not going to do very well in Bexley or Kensington and Chelsea, but there are boroughs where Labour has been powerful in the past, where their dominance is going to be threatened, partly because in some boroughs they're seen as too dominant, and partly because this new grouping to the left of Labour is, I wouldn't say it's not only present in London, but it's particularly present in London because of the young voter base.
And I guess focusing specifically on this new left grouping, call it whatever you want to call it. You mentioned Newham and Redbridge, and in the general election, they came pretty close to unseating lots of high-profile Labour MPs like West Streeting. So what do you think is the difference in the appeal there between this left-wing group that is obviously in large part motivated by international foreign policy issues, particularly around Israel and Gaza, and then someone like Zach Polanski, who is, and the Green Party, who are obviously much more interested in climate change issues and particularly in terms of London politics, more interested in active travel, public transport, cycling, whereas it seems like lots of the other left grouping, you could call it, are a bit more conservative on that issue. So what do you think is the driving the two different parties, and where are their voters different from one another?
Well, that is, in a sense, a question that is fascinating to unravel, not just in London, because you're absolutely right. Greens, of course, they're more than an environmental party. They have to have other policies. They have MPs now, so they've got to go broader than purely the environment. But it is their starting point, and it's the thing I think that motivates their most motivated members and activists. The Corbyn Party, which is coming into existence, is in some ways like Momentum, but in some ways has roots back in the radicalism of the 70s and 60s, you know, and some of its members, like Jeremy Corbyn, have been around since then. So that's slightly different. Probably concerned about the environment, definitely concerned about Gaza and Palestine. And then you've got these independents who have particularly fought on the issue of Palestine. And so they're an uneasy coalition. They're sort of fragmented and uneasy coalition. But I understand that they are trying to get their game to work together for the borough elections in order that they don't fight each other. So it'll be very interesting to see how they decide who should fight where. But that's a general issue relating, as I'm sure we'll get onto, to tactical voting, which won't only apply in relation to them and the Labour Party, but elsewhere between the Conservatives and the Liberal Democrats, for example. So, in our voting system, tactical voting, as we saw in the 2024 election, is now hugely important. So people have learned who to vote against or who to vote for to get their second preference result. We're going to see a lot of that in future.
Exactly. And I think it's really interesting that, as you mentioned, there are already divisions within the Jeremy Corbyn party. The Green Party leadership election got a bit nasty as well, didn't it? So these parties are a bit divided already inside themselves.
The left is famously factional. Yeah. It always has been. And even the far left of the Labour Party. And it's interesting, there's another group we haven't quite touched on, which is people who won't leave the Labour Party. We're talking about people like John McDonnell and Diane Abbott here, who are long-term Labour members, but who will have lots of sympathy with these groups we're talking about. But I mean, famously, the left has always been very, very, very factional. And one of the intriguing things about the British party system is that factionalism, which was always present on the far left, and therefore on the edge of the Labour Party, has now broken out on the right. Because the Conservative Party was a famously coherent bloc over time, but it's now got a problem trouble is Reform are not purely on their right, they're sometimes on the right, but to their right. So they've now got the same kind of problem on the right with factionalism because of Reform. So that's why the whole system is moving from a 2.5-party system to potentially a 5-party system, according to the polls at the moment.
Okay, so why don't we come on to talk about what's happening on the right of politics in London. The Conservative Party are probably not expecting a great set of local elections next year, I think it's fair to say, but they might be hoping for a bit of good news in London, possibly winning Westminster and Wandsworth, as you mentioned, winning back those sort of totemic flagships they held for so many decades. How likely do you think that is at the moment in those particular boroughs?
I think it's a reasonable chance. I mean, if you look at where the polls were in the run-up to the 2022 elections, when these borough elections were last fought, and look where they are now, and strip everything else out of it, i.e. all these new parties, the Conservatives are doing less well than they were doing in 2022, but Labour is doing much less well than in 2022. And that, in conventional political, cephalogical, not a word we should really use much, terms, is a shift. So it's a swing from Labour to the Conservatives, if you take everything else out. So in boroughs that are Labour-Conservative competitive, Barnet, Wandsworth, Westminster, most obviously, but also actually places like Enfield and Redbridge, which have all been very dominated by these parties really continuously. Then if you look at what will happen there, it's hard not to imagine there'll be a swing to the Conservatives, even though it's all this noise going on, because of the relative positions they start from back in 2022. We weren't expecting, I'm sure you weren't expecting in this podcast and broadcast to talk about Trafford, but actually there was a by-election in Trafford just yesterday, when it was very like some parts of London, so about 80%+ of the vote was Conservative or Labour, and the Conservatives won it from Labour. And that is a little straw in the wind, I think, about the Conservative versus Labour fights, contests that still exist. It won't be like this in Bexley, but we'll come on to that.
Okay. So you mentioned Enfield. That's a really interesting case study where the Conservatives have a good chance of winning back control from Labour, but are obviously worried about losing a large part of their vote to Reform and the effect that could have. Do you think in outer London the Conservatives should be worried about Reform taking off a large part of their vote, or do you think they should consider it, as they would have in years ago, a more traditional Conservative versus Labour contest?
Well, I think here we've got to rely, look, we've got some evidence, a bit of evidence. First, the most obvious piece of evidence is what happened in the local elections outside London, but right on the border in May this year, and that gives us a clue. In places like Bexley and Bromley, where Reform did enormously well just over the boundary, and in, you know, Bexley and Dartford are just continuously built up. So I think we will see Reform do well in some boroughs, but not in all. So we'll come back to Enfield and other parts of outer London. I think there'll be some wins for Reform there, but not comprehensive wins. Mm-hmm. So you'd expect on the sort of Hertfordshire and Essex border some wins and the outer part of those boroughs, but not in the way I think in places like Havering and Bexley, where on the basis of earlier factors about voting, of which more in a moment, you'd expect Reform to do very well. The earlier factor is, of course, how people voted in the referendum back in 2016. And whether it's a large Leave vote, it's a not bad predictor of where Reform are likely to do well. And that immediately gives you clues about Havering, Bexley, Sutton, rather more surprisingly, Lib Dem Council, of which more later perhaps,
yeah.
And then Bexley, which I mentioned as well. So, you know, so we need to look to some evidence, particularly the Leave vote, to give us clues about where Reform's likely to do well,
okay,
or badly indeed.
Yeah, exactly. And at the local elections last year, which obviously didn't take place in London, but May this year, Reform did incredibly well elsewhere in the country, won control of 10 councils, and seemed to be reshaping local government in those kind of areas. If there is a possibility that Reform could win control of a borough in London or form a coalition with the Conservatives, perhaps, in somewhere like Havering or Bexley, how do you think that would change London's governance? How do you think that would impact how other councils work with Reform councils, how the GLA works with a Reform council? How would that dynamic shift with a whole new party coming in?
Well, I mean, the Local Governments Association nationally has already had to deal with this issue because it represents councils across England. And as a result, they have a Reform group inside the LGA. So I think that if Reform were to win a council outright or to be the largest party and have to form some sort of agreement, that begs an interesting question, of course, of whether other parties would try to put together a coalition to keep Reform out. That's another possibility. But in the end, London councils representing the boroughs, City Hall, the mayor, would have to deal with a Reform council in just the same way they do others. They'd have been legitimately elected. And, you know, in terms of liberal democracy, they'd have to be given exactly the same treatment as any other party that was represented. And presumably, and this begs an interesting question, they'd have policy views. And they'd have policy views on development, for example. And those would become immediately interesting to everybody who's involved in construction and development industry.
Fantastic. I should give a plug to our reform reports that Consilio put out every month, analysing what the reform-led councils are doing around the country, and we might be seeing a lot more of that in London maybe after May. So why don't we move on to the Liberal Democrats now? They seem to be in a strong position nationally. Of course, they're led by proud South West Londoner Ed Davey. Do you think that traditionally their stronghold has been in the South West? Do you think we're likely to see a serious push from the Lib Dems in May into more central Labour boroughs, possibly Southwark, Camden, Haringey, where they've had a good base in the past?
I mean, the most obvious place for them to look to win a council outright is Merton. You know, you'd have to say on the basis of their success in the general election in Wimbledon last year that Merton must be a top target for the Lib Dems, and they'll undoubtedly put effort in there. But your question points to the fact that they've done far better in the past and still have a base in, let's say, Haringey, in Tower Hamlets in the past as well. You know, I mean, that's just more distant and different. And they did win a by-election in Camden recently in West Hampstead. So I think, yes, the Lib Dems, who are, you know, they did incredibly well at the general election last year, for years and years and years and years of moaning about how the first-past-the-post voting system gave them too few seats for the number of votes they won. The general election last year, they got entirely proportionate. They targeted their votes so well that they managed to get 11% of the votes and 11% of the seats, I think it was, at the national level. And I think something like that will happen in London. So they will target their efforts in places like West Hampstead, but not across Camden. They'll do it in the west part of Haringey, but not the whole of Haringey, hoping that they can begin to build back inroads to, you know, winning 300 or 400 seats as they have in the past, but they didn't last time. So I think, yes, I would expect them to start. And Southwark, of course, is another place where they control the riverfront, but not so far south. So I think you'll see quite a lot of Lib Dem action at the margin to push either south or west, depending on where they are, or east in Camden, to try to extend the way they can win seats.
And thinking about the Lib Dems' sort of southwest stronghold that we mentioned, in the context of the Conservatives losing their flagship councils that we've mentioned, Labour looking increasingly worried about councils that they previously would have considered very safe, what do you think makes the Lib Dems' sort of southwest London base so durable for them compared to other parts of London and the country?
Well, it's interesting. It's worth remembering that the Liberal Democrat vote in southwest London, so in Kingston, Richmond and Sutton, was a Labour vote originally. It was back in the 1960s and 70s. It was a Labour vote that migrated to the Liberal Democrats, and that allowed moderate Conservatives to migrate to this sort of centrist party. It's what, you know, it's the sort of ideal version of politics that many, you know, in the centre of politics, always wished happened. So you get this great big centrist bloc, and then it becomes dominant. Yet, oddly, it never worked like that. And across Britain as a whole, you had a left-wing party and a right-wing party, or left-to-centre, right-to-centre party, and they were just bloc parties that kept out the centre. So that's, so in the sense that they've managed to do this sort of ideal version of centrist politics. I think the answer to why they're so powerful is that the Conservative Party has been pretty unpopular in recent years, and they're their main competitors. So in Richmond and Kingston in particular, it's a Conservative or Lib Dem versus Conservative fight. Lib Dems did well when the Conservatives were in power, and as the longer they were in power, the better they did, to the fact that Richmond has virtually, I don't think there's any opposition now. So the Conservatives will come back there eventually, here and there, but and of course the Liberal Democrats in these places are endlessly trading off, trying to hold Conservative voters whilst also having centre-left voters in the centrist bloc. They've been successful at it. My guess is they'll continue to be successful at it next year, because both the Labour Party and the Conservative Party are unpopular at the same time. And if that continues, it's great for the Lib Dems.
And so I wanted to finish off by thinking about, in a broad sense, how the results next year could impact decision making for planning and development. It seems likely that we might have more boroughs under no overall control compared to what we have. I think it's fair to say we probably have a historically fairly low number of boroughs under no overall control at the moment.
2006, there were many more. Yeah,
And obviously that leads to coalitions and horse trading and that kind of thing. So how do you think more no overall control would change how boroughs run and how they would particularly work with the GLA and the national government? Do you think that's going to be a good thing for London, or do you think it will just lead to more sort of division and a weaker voice for London when talking to the government?
Well, and that's a cool question. I'll answer it, but it's just, I think, worth pointing out that whatever happens is happening against the backdrop of this major reform to the planning system that the government's proposing, which, if I, you know, what I read in the media generally, is going to be quite radical when it comes to changing the regulations and demands for social and affordable housing and so on. So that's going to be a sort of countervailing force to what I'm about to say, which is there's no question that in many parts of London, Labour councils have been more pro-development than Conservatives and Liberal Democrats, yep. Other things being equal, not true ever, but generally. So the weaker Labour are, the more their opponents, not just the Conservatives and Liberal Democrats, other parties, I think are likely to pick up on where there's anti-development sentiment as a good cause to run with in the local elections next year. And there are plenty of places in London where anti-development sentiment is powerful, particularly amongst voters, owner-occupiers, often older owner-occupiers, who are the same people who vote a lot. There's a complete overlap there between people who are interested in these issues and people have a view on them and voting. So I think that not only the risk of them being more no overall control councils making it more difficult for decision making, but the fact is that the anti-Labour coalition, if you can call it that, involving the Conservatives, the Lib Dems, the Greens, the Corbyn Party and the Independents, they'll all be, to some extent, I think, looking for votes. And opposing Labour on development issues in some places will be popular. So, with that in mind, I think that the impact of not only the outcome of the election, but the election itself is going to make development slightly more difficult. But then we've got to go back to this issue of what the government's doing to liberalise planning, which may override councils more than in the past. And where that all comes, where it settles, we'll discover in about 3 years' time.
Fantastic. Thank you, Tony. That was absolutely fascinating discussion. And hopefully we'll get to talk to you again in the future, perhaps to pick over these
results. How wrong I was.
Yeah. I'm sure not how wrong you were, but certainly... London politics, it doesn't look like it's going to get any less interesting anytime soon.
We hope not.
Well, thank you very much for your time. And we hope you enjoyed this edition of the Better Places podcast from Consilio. Don't forget to sign up for Consilio's monthly election reports on the upcoming London elections. We'll give you all the latest news and polling analysis each month up until the elections in May. You can sign up to receive our first report by going to the website or clicking the link in the description. So thank you very much once again, Tony, for joining us. And thank you for watching, and goodbye.